Okay, so we're going to do something on Elul today. And also it's based on the Parsha. But before I get to the specific area of the Parsha we're going to deal with, which is then explained by the Rebbe in a Sicha, a very beautiful idea. Just generally, there's a principle that anything that happens in the Shalach HaKadosh says that anything that is read in the Torah at a particular time, we say that Parsha always has a connection to that time. We've mentioned that a number of times. So Parsha Shoftim, which is this week, right? There's a famous connection between Parsha Shoftim and Elul, which the masters of Musar and Hasidus all talk about. And that is the very first mitzvah of the Torah in this Parsha, which is to appoint judges. But the way it's written in the Torah, it says, Shoftim v'shoitrim, judges and officers, titein lecha b'chol she'arecha, you shall place at all your gates, meaning all your cities, that's what it means. Asher Hashem elokecha noeslach, which Hashem has given you. In other words, that's the mitzvah that each place, each town, each city, whatever, had to, in Eretz Yisrael particularly, had to appoint judges to have a based in and officers to enforce the law, right? No, the first mitzvah in the Parsha. Sorry, yeah, in first mitzvah of the Parsha, yeah. So what they say is that we always read Shoftim towards the beginning of Elul. Elul, of course, is the Chodesh HaCheshbon. It's the month of reflection of the year gone by. And one of the ways to enforce that whole idea of the reflection is to reflect on the judges and officers at our own personal gates. Right, and there's many ways it's different. It's explained in many Sfarim in different ways. I'll just show you one way it's explained in a Maimon that I learned. That a person has four gates. Gates means we know that the main part of the human being is the head. That's the intellect. That's what drives us. That's what allows us to make decisions. And in the physical head, we have what's called four gates: the eyes, where we look at things and allow things in; the ears, where we choose which information we allow in, and so on. Smell, the nose, which is the cavities of the head, basically, right? And the mouth. And each are important in terms of serving Hashem, and each are important to place shoftim, to place judges there, that to make sure that the wrong things don't come in. And the way the Rebbe explains in this particular maimon that I learned, which I'll mention later in the Parsha Shir as well, is this, that in the negative sense, in other words, what can be led in that is wrong? That's the concept of sight, that's the eyes, where we look at things we're not supposed to look at, and so on. That's letting in images or letting in messages that we are bad for us, right? Ears, of course, is the concept of letting in negativity, letting lashon hara, gossip about other people, believing bad about other people, and so on and so forth. Speech, of course, is just the concept of using our speech incorrectly and excessively. You know, the Pirkei Avos tells us that, I think it was Shmuel said that I grew up among the wise and I didn't find anything more beneficial for the human being than shtika, than silence. Now, of course, we know that the person is the medaber, is the speaker. But nevertheless, you know, we learn in many Sfarim that excessive speech normally leads to bad things. Impulsive speech, excessive speech, reactionary speech, and so on. And therefore, that's the judge we have to put it at, the judge, the officer we need to put at that gate, to make sure that doesn't happen. And then the smell is an interesting one. There's a Gemara that talks about sinful thoughts, in other words, negative thoughts, toxic thinking. And it says that sometimes the thoughts about sins are worse than the sin itself. And Rashi talks about there that it's got to do with, like, for example, when you smell something good, you smell good food or something, sometimes you're more driven and you're more drawn to it than if you just see it or you just come across it. So that's that power of smell. So it's about letting in things that are very tempting, and therefore the negative way, the smell represents the letting in of what we call machshava zaros, foreign thoughts or sinful thoughts, things that are bad for us. Okay, and that's the Elul thing about shoftim v'shoitrim, right? The parasha says, judges and officers you should place by your gates to make sure these things don't happen, and that's of course the foundation of how we do tshuva, to make sure that those judges and officers are, in fact, in place. On the flip side, how should we be using it? What's the idea of really, what's these four gates that we have? What should we be letting in other words? So in this, again, this particular maimer explains that eyes is the concept of re'iyah. We know when you see something, it's clear, right? So it's about gaining clarity, having the values, having the things, seeing the hand of Hashem, seeing the things that we have in life, having it very clear, crystal clear, that we don't have, we remove ambivalence and we remove doubt, right? That's the concept of re'iyah, in the spiritual side, in other words. Spiritual side is about looking at things we should look at, but just not just looking at things we should look at, but also seeing things clearly, not blurring the things that we look at in life, but seeing things clearly, having the clear perspectives, right? Ears is an idea of shma, lishma, to hear, which always refers to understanding. It's about understanding, about learning, about letting in the things and really processing godliness and spirituality to such an extent that it has an impact on the way we live. Speech is the concept of davening, right? Using our mouth for davening, the importance of avodas tefillah. This is particularly relevant in Elul. The Birka Yosef says that there were great Talmidei Chachamim who even during Elul, they would, it seems what he's saying is they would even minimize the time that they would put aside for learning and increase the time they would daven. The Rebbe actually has a talk where he reframes that a bit. He says, not that we'd minimize the learning. The learning would stay what it is and they would still add in davening. Because the Rebbe says if something's like dessert, if you really like something, you'll find time for it, right? Okay. And then the smell is the idea of ketores. We know that in the Beis HaMikdash they would bring ketores, different to a korban. Korban were like the animal that was brought outside. Ketores was the incense that we smelled. And that, al pi chassidus, represents a deeper kesher with Hashem, not just about things we process or see or understand or learn, but it's reaching a higher level of connection with Hashem, which is very much connected to the concept of tshuva. That's what happened on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur goes to the very heart of the connection between Hashem and the Jewish people. And that's why it's similar to the idea of smell, which is the idea of ketores. Even the translation of the word ketores actually comes from the Aramaic word katara, which is kuf tes resh, which is to tie a knot. To tie a knot to make something completely one with the thing that you're tying with, to bring together two things, which is the idea of the non-movable knot that we create between us and Hashem, particularly during the days of Tshuva, Elul and Yom Kippur, and so on. Okay. So that's the connection between the beginning of the parasha and Elul. What I really want to spend the shir on is a beautiful, different connection, which the Rebbe learns in a sicha. I'm not going to go through the whole sicha because it's quite complicated, but I'll give a bit of background to it. It's what we call a Rashi sicha. I'll just give you a bit of background to the type of sicha. So in 1965, It was actually still 64, because the 6th of Tishrei. Still 64, but it was Tafshin Chafei. The Rebbe's mother passed away, right? In Crown Heights. The Rebbe's father, after he left Russia, the Rebbe never saw his father again, because the Rebbe's parents weren't able to come to his wedding. They couldn't get out of Russia for it. He got married in Poland. And then his father was arrested and sent to exile in a place called Almaty, and he ended up passing away in Chile. It was like the furthest place in Russia, and he passed away there eventually, just a few years after the war. It's a whole story in Zohar, which is it's a tragic but fascinating story, an insight to who he was, such a great person. But the Rebbe's mother eventually made it out of Russia in 1947. She went to Paris, and the Rebbe went from New York. It was the only time from when the Rebbe arrived in New York that he ever went on a plane or ever went out of New York City or out of the New York State, whatever. I mean, actually, he hardly ever left Brooklyn. The Rebbe never took a holiday. The only time the Rebbe left Brooklyn was to go to Queens when he visited the resting place of the Friedrich Rebbe. And the only time he ever left New York was a couple of times when the camp was established, Camp Gan Yisrael, the Rebbe left for a few hours to visit the kids in camp or to visit the campsite. Other than that, he worked 24/7, was in his office every single day from when he became a Rebbe. It's a fascinating thing. Anyway, so his mother, he went in 1947, he wasn't Rebbe yet, he went to Paris to greet his mother, and he brought her back to New York, and ever then she lived in New York until 64. Now, the Rebbe did something in honor of her. He started a whole new line of talks. He's talking what we call, what we refer to today as the Rashi Sichas. That every Shabbos when the Rebbe would have a Fabrengen, he would pick a Rashi from the Parsha, right? And he would ask a lot of questions. And he developed a whole shita, a whole, a whole philosophy and sort of idea of how Rashi is supposed to be studied. Part of the concept is that Rashi was written for a child, and Rashi was always there to explain the simple pshat of the pasuk. So Rashi is not like the other commentaries, like the Kliyokar, the Aruch Chaim, that will bring Kabbalah, or Drush, or Midrash, or that kind of thing. Rashi is only... Therefore, when there's no Rashi, that means the pshat should be understood. And they would often use the time to talk about Rashi, that how come there's no Rashi in this pasuk? Because there's so many questions. Right? And then you explain it. But more time, it was the opposite way around. It was like, you would take a Rashi and would say, exactly what's bothering Rashi? What is the question? Why did Rashi quote these words from the pasuk and not other words? It was a very, very extensive, and there's lots of sichas in the Likutei Sichas, where we call them Rashi sichas. Those that are edited, and there's more that aren't edited, of course, where the Rebbe explains a Rashi he would ask like lots of questions on the Rashi, based on his philosophy of how to learn Rashi, and then go into an extensive explaining how it worked. Okay. Also, the Rebbe said, and he brought proofs from this from earlier sources, that although Rashi's primary thing is to explain the pshat of the pasuk, but embedded in Rashi is what we call Yeina Shel Torah, the wine of the Torah, which means very deep concepts, chassidus, kabbalah, lessons, inspiration, and so on. Okay. So on this week's parasha, there's a sicha on a Rashi. I'm not going to go through the whole Rashi sicha, because that's really another shiur, but I'll just give you the gist of it. But nevertheless, what I want to more go through with you is the second part of the sicha, where the Rebbe learns an amazing thing, and he connects it to Elul. Okay. In order to understand the Rashi, we're clear, we're good? In order to understand the Rashi, we have to learn a few psukim from this week's parasha. So have a look at number one in your handout. This is, in this week's parasha, we have the whole ceremony that used to take place when the Yidden came into Eretz Yisrael and they would go out to war. Okay? So it's really the one possibility, but just to give a bit of background, we need to read through this psukim quickly. So the Kohen would get up, they would all gather all the troops, and the Kohen would get up. There was a Kohen, there was an officer, and they would get up and he would make the speech, and he would say the following. V'omar Aleim, it's number one, all the psukim there. V'omar Aleim, and he would say to them, Shema Yisrael, listen, Jewish people. Atem Karevim. Is the, want to give it the handout? Oh, like I said, there, wherever you want. Right? Atem Karevim, you are coming close. Hayom al Muhammad today for war. Alavechem, against your enemies. Al Yerach Levavchem, do not have soft hearts. Al Tiru, do not feel. Al Tachbazu, don't get baffled. Al Tarts of name, just don't be disturbed by the enemy, right? Why? It says the next pasuk, Hashem Alakechem, Halichem Achem Hashem, your God is going with you, Lelachem Achem, to fight you, Alavechem, with your enemies. The goal is Lahishia Eschem, to save you. Okay. Then there was a whole interesting thing. The officers took over and they said the following. The Dibru Hashoitrim, the officers, the policemen will get up and they would speak to the nation layman. They would say, they would make four announcements. The four announcements went like this. This week's parasha. Mi Oish. Sorry, a layman, they would say the following. First one was Mi Oish Ashabona Bais Chodosh. Who is the soldier here that has built a new house, but Veloy Chanochai has not inaugurated yet, which means hasn't moved in yet? Yele for Yosher Lebesa, he should actually go back. Because we don't want people to have anguish and anxiety and war. But Yomus Lamachom, just in case he'll die in war, Vish Acha Yachtachenu, and know that someone else has taken over the house that he built. Okay? Second one was Mio Yishu, the person Asher Nata Kerem, who's planted a vineyard. But Veloy Chilolo, he hasn't made it non-holy, which means it's a reference to, you know, the first 3 years you're not allowed to eat the fruit. The fourth year, you have to redeem it on money, or redeem it on something, or eat it as holiness, whatever the case is. If you haven't done that, Yelech Yosher Lebeisa, you should go back home. But Yomus Hamachom, in case you die, War of Ish Achi Chalenu, and someone else will do it. Mi Yoish, third one was Mi Ish Asher Eiras Isha. Who's the person who has betrothed, has become engaged, or that kiddushin with a woman? Lele Kocha, but has not yet properly married her. He hasn't lived with her yet. Yelech Yosher Lebeisa should go back to his house. In case he dies, Ish Acher, you could hear someone else does it. Okay. And then he made one final announcement. This is the pasuk that we need. Then the officers would continue speaking to the nation and would say the following. Anyone who is scared, and soft-hearted, meek-hearted. Yelach v'yoshel beisav should leave now and go home. Lo yimas es levav echos, he should not scare other people, bring down the morale, kilvavay, like his heart. He shouldn't make other people think like he's thinking, and therefore, better go home now.
Okay.
Just tell you a nice story. I once heard this in primary school. And then you should go and you'll fight the war and everything will be okay. So, there was a time, unfortunately, where there was a lot of maskilim. Maskilim were the enlightened people who moved away from really authentic Yiddishkeit. They were very into culture and language and grammar. And some of them were even religious, but not in mind, only in deed, some of them, right? They were really heretics and they were schlepping a lot of youth away. They schlepped tons of youth away from Yiddishkeit, right? So apparently they once made a play, almost making fun of the Torah, right? They believed in the Torah, learning Torah, but more from a linguistic point of view and, cultural point of view, but they didn't really believe in the authenticity of Torah properly. This was like with a pre-runner to the modern day reform, I guess, right? So they made a play, and the play was about the Yidden going to war, and they played out this parasha. And as soon as H1 made the announcement, a whole bunch of people left, right? And at the end, who was left? It was like three old rabbis or something who left, and they were going to war. That was like making fun of the Torah. Okay. So it was in the time of the Chofetz Chaim. So they told the Chofetz Chaim, they went to the Chofetz Chaim about this terrible thing, that they made such fun of the Torah, and this is the play that they made, right? So the Chofetz Chaim said, actually, it's not such a bad play. They just left out one scene at the end, that the three people went and they won. That's the scene they left out. Because if you do what the Torah says, then you're in the war, right? Okay. Good, that's just a nice story. Okay. So on this last pasuk, that he says, whoever's scared should go back home. Rashi, let's learn the Rashi.
Okay.
Rashi says the following. Hayore v'racha leva. Rashi brings, what do you mean the scared? Why is the person scared? Right? Why is the person scared? Rabbi Akiva Omer says, Rashi, Rabbi Akiva says, Kamashpoi, just the pshat, the regular pshat. As it seems, why are they scared? Well, is anyone scared when they go to war? She'en yocha lamoid b'kishriya muhammad. This is just a guy who just can't stomach war, that's all. The lira skerev shlufoi, he just won't be able to handle seeing swords, seeing this. Warfare is not for him, especially if they got closer, he really chickens out, he can't do this, right? So, okay, go home. Otherwise, you're going to just bring down the whole morale. That's Rabbi Akiva's pshat. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Oimer, Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, no. What do we mean by scared? Hayore me'aveiroi shebiyodoi. Someone is scared because he sins. He's got averis. I guess he hasn't done proper tshuva yet, right? Says Rabbi Yossi Aglili, actually, v'lochein tolse l'toyre l'achzor al-bayis v'kerem v'isha. That's actually why the Torah says people who built a house and a vineyard and haven't married also need to leave. Why? It was to cover for people who have averis. In other words, a whole bunch of people are going to leave, right? When he finishes the speech. People have married, people have built vineyards, people have built a house, and then people have averis. And everyone who sees this, choizer, he sees the people leaving, I will say, well, probably Shabbat Bonham Bais, maybe built a house, or not to carry my plant to the vineyard, or Eras Isho, or he became engaged to a woman. In other words, they won't know that he's leaving because of Averis. That's why Hashem gave a few scenarios where you have to leave in order to cover, not to embarrass the person doing Averis. Okay. So as I said, the Rebbe had the sikh on this Rashi, and there's so many questions there. First of all, the Rebbe has had a rule that when there's two views in Rashi, when Rashi brings two views, it's because each of them have a problem in Pshat. And therefore, there's no a problem in the pshat, and therefore Rashi had to bring both to he brings both, right? Otherwise, if one of them was just explained the pshat and the other one was more sort of midrashic, then Rashi would leave it out. Rashi only explains pshat. Okay. Second of all, the Rebbe would also ask, the Rebbe had a rule like this, that in Rashi doesn't always bring the author of the people, the authors of the people that say the pshat. Rashi is actually mostly anonymous. He says, one pshat's like this, second pshat's like that. It doesn't say who says it. When he brings it, there's a reason. And it's got to do with the pshat and why it sort of enhances the pshat, if you know who it was. Anyway, there was a whole thing, and it's very, very complicated. It's got to do with the fact that already the the beginning of the parasha said, we learned it, the first pasuk we learned was that the Kohen gets up and says not to be afraid. So why is it a second afraid? Is it because they came closer now to the war? Is it because now suddenly a person... Anyway, lots of different things that Rebbe sort of works it out. I'm going to go through the second part mainly, but I will tell you just one thing that Rebbe says more beautifully, thing which also moves into the whole thing, to the whole idea of shofar and the shofar and Elul. Again, I'm skipping out half the sicha because it's a whole different... It wouldn't be about Elul, it would just be... it's a complicated technical thing, which maybe one day we'll learn, but not for this year. One thing that Rebbe does say is about Rabbi Akiva. Why we know about Rabbi Akiva? And why Rabbi Akiva wants... Apparently, learning the simple pshat that the guy's just scared of war has problems. That has problems in pshat, because I think that already came before, or other problems with it. And yet Rabbi Akiva chose to learn this pshat instead. He chose to learn the simple pshat, the guy's just scared of war. And he didn't take the second pshat, that he's scared of Averis. Why not? So he says that Rabbi Akiva, and I'll say the pshat, and then we'll go into the rest of the sikh, and we'll come back to why it fits so nicely with the whole idea of tshuva. Rabbi Akiva was always known to look at the good of another Jew. He always saw the good. Not only a Jew, everything. Another thing, many, many things, right? They went to the Beis Hamikdash, Rabbi Akiva only saw the good. He started smiling, everyone else was crying, right? Rabbi Akiva, before they killed him, he was smiling because he said, oh, I can do the mitzvah b'chol moedecha now, giving up my life for Hashem. Many, many instances where Rabbi Akiva sees the bigger picture and he sees the good. Rabbi Akiva says, I can't understand the second pshat. Why not? If a person is scared about his averus, right? By the way, Rabbi Akiva is also one that said, v'haftal reacha kamoicha is the foundation of the whole Torah, right? Famous idea. Rabbi Akiva, oimer ze klal godol b'Torah. It's one of the 12 psukim, you know, the 12 passages, right? That v'haftal reacha kamoicha, love your fellow as yourself. Rabbi Akiva, oimer ze klal godol b'Torah. This is the foundation of the Torah. This is the general rule of the entire Torah. Says Rabbi Akiva, I don't understand the second pshat. What do you mean he's scared about his averus? If a person is scared about his averus, that means he just reflected on the fact that he has averus, he has things that are wrong, and he's scared. So in other words, he regrets doing them. So by the very fact that he's scared about his averus, he's already had an awakening of tshuva. If he had an awakening of tshuva, he doesn't have the averus. So why is he scared? Why is he scared to go into the war? The fact that he's scared before he goes into the war means he's already, he's done, he's finished. He's done it. That's not that simple, as we've seen before. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, we learn not that he didn't look at the good, but Rabbi Yossi Aglili was a person that Rabbi explains, he brings proofs from the Gemara, he was a person that looked more in details. So, I mean, the fact is, he hasn't finished the tshuva. He has to go through the tshuva as a process, right? But for Rabbi Akiva, that's enough. It's enough. In the Yisoyerus, we have the whole thing already, and therefore it's enough. And therefore, you can't learn that pshat in the pasuk. That wouldn't be enough to send him away from war, to be scared that he's going to die in war because of his averus. The very fact that he's scared of his averus means he doesn't have what to worry about in war. Okay. Good. So, in the second half of the sikha, the Rebbe says that we always read Parsha Shoftim in Elul. Therefore, it's always connected to Elul, which is the first parsha that is always read in Elul. The one before Shoftim is Re'eh. Re'eh sometimes is read on Rosh Chodesh Elul, when Shabbos is Elul. Or sometimes, or most times Shabbos Mevorachim Elul, like this year. So this past Shabbos was not Elul, it was Shabbos Mevorachim Elul, and we read Re'eh, right? But normally it's not. So Shoftim is always in Elul. What do we do in Elul? In Elul we start to blow Shofar, right? Blow Shofar every day. It's a minhag, it's not. The tour, the tour was the first sort of structure Shulchan Aruch that we have, called the four orders, the four turim, right? When he brings the minhag of blowing shofar in Elul, it's interesting. He says like this. He says there's a minhag to blow shofar in Elul because the pasuk says Allah. It's pasuk in Tilim chapter 47. It's the chapter we say before we blow shofar. We say it seven times before we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, right? In that chapter of Tehillim, it says, Allah Elohim Bisrua Hashem Bekol Shofar. Hashem went up, so to speak, with the shofar, use the word Elohim, and then it says Hashem, Yudke Vavke, with the voice, sorry, Hashem goes up with the Terua, and then the voice of Hashem goes up with the Shofar, and uses the name Yudke Vavke. Okay, I'm not going to go into that pasuk now, but the Rebbe asked the question, it's very interesting that the Torah should bring that with regard to the Shofar in Elul, right? Because the Torah continues after that, he says, that's why Chazal told us that during Elul, we should blow a shofar, because we should remember that Rosh Hashanah is coming, we should do tshuva, because it says, and he brings another pasuk, it says, im yitoka ish shofar be'ir, if a person will blow a shofar in the city, and people won't tremble, in other words, shofar is a wake-up call, right? So people will tremble, and therefore, that's what you should do in Elul. So the Rebbe says, that's very nice, that's a good reason for Elul, but why bring the pasuk, Allah Elohim Bisruva Hashem Bekol Shofar, which is actually the pasuk referring to the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. It's not the pasuk referring to the shofar in Elul. The Medrash says very clearly, because the pasuk begins with Elohim and ends with Yudkei Vavkei, because the Medrash says that when we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem is sitting on the throne of judgment, which is what Rosh Hashanah is, that's a Yom HaDin. But when he hears our shofar, he gets up from the throne of judgment and sits on the throne of mercy. Which is why the pasuk begins with Elohim. Elohim is judgment, it's din. And then we end with Yudkei Vavkei, which is rachamim, right? In other words, that is the... Okay. No, it's my phone, but it's connected to the iPad. I don't switch it still here. Doesn't matter. Right? So that's the shofar, that's the pasuk that is describing what happens. Right, describing what happens on Rosh Hashanah with the shofar. And the Torah is talking about blowing shofar in Elul. So what's going on here? So the Rebbe brings the Rambam. We have to look at the Rambam. It's number 3. We have to go through this carefully. Let's have a look at the Rambam. The Rambam is talking about in the laws of Tshuva, and the Rambam is talking about Rosh Hashanah. Right? So Rosh Hashanah. And he's talking about the general idea of shofar. And the Rambam says the following. Let's go through this Rambam. Afalpi says, Rambam says, Afalpi shetkiya shofar b'Rosh Hashanah gzeiris hakosav. Even though the mitzvah to blow shofar Rosh Hashanah is a decree from Hashem. And the Gemara says this also. In other words, people say, what's the reason you blow shofar? Wake up call, shuva. No, the reason is Hashem says so. That's the reason, right? Nevertheless, says the Rambam, remez yeshpoy. There's a hint. There's a message. Kaloymar. He says, now, on the hand that I've broken it up into paragraphs for a reason, you'll soon see. Kaloyma says, Uru, because it's a message that says, like, Uru Yisheini Mishinaschem. The message of the shofar is, wake up those people who are sleeping from your sleep. V'nirdomim, those people that are in a slumber. Hokitsu Mitardamaschem, get up from your slumber. The Friedrich Rebbe has a mimer where he explains the difference between sleep and slumber. Very interesting. And he explains it first physically and then spiritually. He says, when a person sleeps, so we know when we sleep, our senses don't work so well. The most obvious one is sight. We close our eyes, right? But everything, hearing, right? Nevertheless, when a person sleeping, they weakened, but they're not non-existent, right? You make a bit of noise, whatever sometimes it's. Things that people do even in the middle of sleep, that they sleep talk, whatever. That's sleeping. Slumber means they shut down completely. And explains what it means, beruchnis. That means, sleeping means that the world just hazy, full of contradictions. You do one kedusha, you don't want kedusha, you connect with Hashem, you're not connected to Hashem, you're in a big shlof. Shlof is contradictions. It's a lot of, when you dream, it's full of contradictions. And then there are people, unfortunately, that are worse than sleep, they're in a slumber, nothing's working. They're just completely disconnected, right? Okay, so the shofar gives us a koyach to get up from both of them. So the shofar says, the Rambam is wake up, those that are sleeping, wake up from your sleep. Those that are slumbering, wake from your slumber. The chipsu b'maseichem, and have a look at your behavior. And then the Rambam says, the chizru b'tshuva. Do tshuva. Do tshuva. Right? Then the Rambam continues, v'zichru b'irachem, remember your creator. What does it mean? And then he addresses, what do you mean, who should remember the Creator? Elu ha-shoichim ha-se'evas, these are the people who forget the truth. V'havle azman, with the passage of the nonsense of time. V'shoigim k'shol shnasim, and they spend their years behevel v'rik with absolute nonsense. Ha-shalo yol, that will not help them. V'lo yatzil, will not save them. Right? It's all part of the tshuva process. Habitu, then he goes another paragraph, he says, Habitu l'nafshei seichel. Right? Look at your souls. Ve'tivu d'archeichem aleichem, and start doing better, improve. Ve'yazav mikol echad mekem, and all, every one of you should leave their way. Darkei oro, machshavtoi ashaloi toiva. You read their bad thoughts that aren't good and the whole thing. And that's the message of the Shofar. Okay. Says the Rebbe, I have a question. All right. What's the question? The wording of the Rambam is very funny. He has this whole message, right? Get up from your sleep, look at your ways, do tshuva, remember your creator, look at your soul, improve your ways, go deeper, the whole thing, right? It's all part of the tshuva, right? So one would imagine the word, the phrase, v'chizru b'tshuva, do tshuva should come at the end. It should be, wake up you guys, you're sleeping. Look, remember your creator, look what you're doing, look at the nonsense you've been involved in. Look at your souls. It should go through the whole thing, and what should be the conclusion? Do tshuva. And the Rambam doesn't do that. The Rambam interrupts himself. The point is, Shofar wakes you up to do tshuva. Okay? But he has a whole description here. So what you imagine is you say, even though Shofar is a law, there's a remez. You should go through the whole paragraph. What's this whole paragraph coming to wake you up and describe what you should be doing? To do what? To do tshuva. Right? So the chizru b'tshuva, you should do tshuva, should come all the way at the end. Now, in fact, this Rambam over here is divided into three parts. It's wake up from your sleep, do a basic tshuva, in other words, just like, start looking at yourself. Then the whole thing about remembering your creator, it's a bit more cryptic and deeper. And then the last paragraph is look at your soul, go really inwards. And the Rebbe Rashab, in a famous mimer, explains actually that there's three levels of tshuva. You know that on a very basic halachic level, the basic of tshuva is you wake up from your sleep and I'm going to improve my ways, just to get at you, right? Then there's a deeper tshuva, and the Rebbe Rashab, we're not going to go through this now, it's not so easy to understand exactly what he says anyway, but he says actually that on Rosh Hashanah there are three brachas, three main brachas in the middle of Musaf, famous brachas. The brachas of kingship, malchios, the brachas of remembrance, and the brachas of shofar, right? And he says the three levels of tshuva correspond to those three brachas, yeah? And he explains one is deeper than the other, and in fact he says also corresponds to tkiya, shvarim, and trua. Tkiya is like a cry from the soul, but shvarim is really a brokenness. Trua says that the tshuvas reach you so deeply that you can't even cry. In other words, you're crying only silently, which is symbolized in the shofar by blowing the trua. Trua is like very nothing sound. It's like dots, dots, dots. It's like, right? So tkiya is a yearning. Shvarim is like you're feeling really broken with such a yearning with a brokenness, right? Which is could be a positive brokenness, like we learned last week. But then trua is just like you can't even cry. So deep, right? Okay, again, so three levels of tshuva. But again, the same question. So why is it? So it's details of tshuva, levels of tshuva, levels of reflection, levels of what we're supposed to do. So again, why isn't chizru b'tshuva at the end? Right? So the Rebbe says,
question,
yeah.
So during the shofar, what do we have to think or what do we have to do? Or
that's a long shir. No, so the general principle is very quickly is that Elul is the time we make the cheshbon, that we come to the realization that we've been far away from Hashem during the year. Not a lot of good things, but we have lots of things to improve. And we yearn. And then we come Rosh Hashanah, we cry to Hashem, we want to come home. That's the shofar, okay? In a nutshell, with all the details, okay? But here we're talking about shofar in the context of tshuva, so why isn't it at the end of the paragraph? Yeah. That's what we make, exactly. But, so what the question is, what's Elul? What's the shofar of Elul? So the Rebbe says like this, that the reason that the Rambam interrupts himself is because the most important part in the foundation of tshuva is the first paragraph of the Rambam, to wake up. Right? To wake up. All the other levels of tshuva don't start unless you wake up. Once you woken up, then you can, yeah, right? And the Rebbe says that the shofar of Elul mainly is waking up. Right? Now, we'll go back to the Torah at the end, but it's waking up. You know, I want to embellish this a little bit, because also the Rebbe brings an excerpt, which I'm going to read you more with the excerpt. A beautiful, beautiful description. But before we get there was a sicha I once heard from the Rebbe. I was there, but if I bring, I remember. And he spoke about waking up, and he said something so interesting. Must have been in the 80s when I was there as a bacher. And he said something so beautiful. He said, if you ask someone, what's the first part of the siddur? What's the first thing in the siddur? Most people say, Moida Ani. That's the first thing you do. You make up in the morning. You acknowledge Hashem, right? Says the Rebbe, no, it's not true. If you look at the siddur, most siddurim have an instruction before the Moida Ani. Moida Ani is very deep, by the way. The Rebbe would speak extensively of Moida Ani. It's like the connection that a Yid makes with Hashem at the beginning of the day. It's coming from the deep of the Neshama. It's the essence of the Neshama. It's very, very deep, the Moida Ani. But if you look into a siddur, you'll see that most siddurim, even the ones in Hebrew, the siddurim, they have little instructions here and there. In the siddur, the Alter Rebbe siddur particularly, it says, Kesheyeor Mishnasi, when you wake up, Yoimar, you should say the following. In other words, what's the first thing we do in the siddur? Not the Moed Ani, waking up. If you don't wake up, the Moed Ani doesn't start. The day doesn't start. Nothing starts. The day is a very complex day. We have lots of things we're supposed to do during the day. Different components of Avodas Hashem, right? Okay, it's all good. But if you don't wake up, nothing starts. Waking up, that's the ikar, that's the main tshuva. That's the foundation of tshuva. That, in a hidden way, incorporates the whole tshuva. Everything is about to come. Potentially, it has the whole tshuva in it. If you don't wake up, nothing is going to happen. If you wake up, potentially, you're going to go through all levels of tshuva. He brings, and I'm going to read you more than he brings over here, because it's just so beautiful. So there was a sikha that the previous Rebbe once said. It was actually on Pesach, he said the sikha. And he told over his childhood memories from the city of Lubavitch. The Friedrich Rebbe was born in Lubavitch, in the city of Lubavitch, but when he was like 17, I think. No, older than 17. Yeah, he grew up in Lubavitch. Then he had to run, because when the communists took over, they had to leave Lubavitch, and that's when the Rebbe Rashab and the previous Rebbe went to Rostov. And that's where the Friedrich Rebbe became the Rebbe in Rostov. Now there's a Chabad Shlich in Rostov. They rebought the Rebbe Rashab's house there. Anyway, it's a whole center. And then eventually the Friedrich Rebbe went to Leningrad, and then he was arrested, and the story of the 12th of Tammuz, and then he left Russia, right? So the Friedrich Rebbe recounts his memories of childhood memories, how beautiful it was, and everything changed. I want to read it to you, and I'll point out to you which is the paragraph the Rebbe points out to highlights over here. I'm not going to read you the whole thing, because it's in Yiddish. It's a very complex Yiddish, actually, but I'll just try and translate it best I can. It won't be as beautiful as the Friedrich Rebbe writes it. Friedrich Rebbe, generally, by the way, was the most beautiful writer. His power of description was amazing. He would like paint a picture in words that you mamish like it was unbelievable. Anyways, so he writes like this. He says, the Shabbos mevorchim Elul in Lubavitch. Even though it was still a clear sunny day. Don't forget over there, it's the end of the, coming towards the end of the summer, right? But he talks in physical terms, but he means obviously spiritually. Even though it was still a clear sun shining day, but nevertheless, the air changed. You started to feel the scent of Elul. It started to blow a tshuva wind. Every yid was already more, not masinistic, which means more focused, I guess is the word, right? More reflective. And they started to forget about all the weekday and mundane things. Then he says, he goes back and says, after Shabbos Nachamu, which is the Shabbos after Tisha B'Av, right? People started to learn more after Ma'ariv at night, because the night started to get longer, the Gemara says, right? And when it came Shabbos Mevorchim Elul, you could already really feel the Elul air. And with great urgency, or great sort of yearning, they waited for the moment they would start saying the words, L'David Hashem, Oiri V'Yishi, that chapter of Tehillim that we say every day during Eli. They would wait for the voice of the shofar, the first tkiah, which announced that the gates of Chodesh HaRachamim, the month of mercy, have now opened. Then he says, every day in, I'm skipping parts here, but he says, every day in Elul was just so dissimilar to the days of the whole year. And then he writes like this, he's writing as a child, I think. Ligadik in bed, he says, lying in bed, 6 o'clock in the morning. You can already hear the end of the Vasikin minyan. Vasikin minyan means the sunrise minyan. I guess that is sunrise minyan in Lubavitch, right? In the Beis HaMedrash, they already finished davening. You can hear them blowing shofar. The voice of the shofar wakes you up and tells you that it's Elul in the world. You rush. He writes it like in present tense. You rush to get dressed. And you're not so happy with yourself. Why did I sleep so much? In your thoughts, you're sort of replaying that Moshe Rabbeinu went on the mountain. And these are special days. These are days of auspicious day where Hashem forgave the Jewish people, right? And you can do things you can't do a whole year. Medav zayin mensch, you have to be a mensch. You have to not waste the time. And then he says, when you come to the shul, the Beis Medrash, you see there's a lot of people there already. Some are learning, saying Tilim. Some are learning Chassidus. Some are learning, saying pieces of the Zohar. And others are just sitting already deep and davening. Wow. He says, going into the Cheder Sheni. Cheder Sheni was the second room off the shul in Lubavitch. All Chabad shuls would have like a second room in case people wanted to daven longer than the minyan. They were slower. They wanted to just sort of be more reflective and daven. He says, you go into the second room and you get caught. You get chapped up from the unbelievable vision that you see. Everyone is reflective. Translate some of these words, fadveket, which means just like so connected. They don't even see, they don't hear what's going on around them. Such a connection, such a supplication that you feel with every word they're davening, because it's Elul, right? They're becoming closer to the point. They're reaching their purpose. And then he quotes different people that he heard davening saying different phrases. He says, the tachanunim nigun, which means the supplication song of a chassid davening when he says, the havi aleinu bracha v'sholem, that he's asking Hashem to bring us blessing and to bring us peace. Or this quiet, pleasant tune of the guy davening saying, please bring us closer to our land very soon. Or the voice of bitachon, which we hear him saying, ki keil poyel shuvis ata, when the chassid says, you are a God of salvation. Or the happy tune, when you hear the chassid saying, the keraftonu malkeinu l'shimcha agodel, please our king, bring us close to your name, giving us the koyach to say the Shema Yisrael, which comes after that bracha, right? And it's like a whole thing. And then he says that every day becomes closer to Slichus. And then he goes into the whole description of what Shabbos of Slichus used to look like in Lubavitch. Okay. So the Rebbe, the part that the Rebbe quotes is that the Friedrich Rebbe writes that we're lying in bed six in the three, you hear the shofar, and the shofar wakes you up, right? And therefore the Rebbe says like this, the main effect of the shofar, both in the concept of regretting the past or resolve for the future, the main effect of the shofar is the waking up. The waking up. That's what he says. You have to wake up, right? Then obviously, you've got to get into details. And as we go through Elul, and we come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we have to get into the various levels of tshuva. There's so much, there's svarim and svarim written about tshuva. And if you look back at this Rambam and what the Rebbe Rashab explains, there's the tshuva of Malchios, remembrance, there's the tshuva, of kingship, there's the tshuva of Zichreinos, there's a tshuva of Shofreis, right? That's all true, that's all important. And we have to get through all the levels as best we can, each one in their own way, right? But it all starts from the shofar of Elul, the waking up. Then he says like this. He says, what happens is, that's why, the Rambam doesn't, he inserts the words, chizru b'tshuva, du tshuva, after the first paragraph. Because the main part of the first paragraph of what the Rambam says is, uru yishayni mishenaschim, wake up the sleeping people from your sleep, waking up the slumbering people from your slumber. Says the Rambam, that's already tshuva, chizru b'tshuva. He goes through the rest. Then he goes to the details. He goes to the deeper level of tshuva, the deeper level of tshuva about whatever that means in terms of how Shuvah plays out. There's lots of details of Shuvah, but the Rambam inserts, he doesn't wait till the end to insert that paragraph. Because he wants to bring out that the main foundation of Shuvah, which is the main point and effect of the Shofar, particularly of Elul, is Uru Yesheinu Mishinaschem, wake up. Just the waking up. Once you wake up, everything is possible. Says the Rebbe like this, the waking up is so important that potentially, the when a person wakes up and says, oi, free crib in bed, or us when we realize, like, you know, it's ill and we've got to really shift, yeah? That waking up is like a seed of a tree. It's like the seed being planted. That seed, that's, I didn't say the word seed of a tree, but I'm just bringing it out as a marshal, right? That seed that you plant potentially has the entire tree. The entire tree is already in the seed. If you don't plant the tree, there's not going to be a tree. But you plant a seed, you already have the whole tree. Now, you don't have the whole tree, you got to water it, you got to have sunshine, it's got to grow, you have to have the branches, but it's all in the seed already. I think it's a similar thing we're trying to bring out of here in the sikh with waking up. Waking up contains the entire Shuvah. Right? All the details we talk about, you have to reach later, all the pratim, all the specifics of Shuvah is all contained in the waking up. That's why in Elul, we don't only blow the tekiah. We blow the shvarim and true as well. That's why the tur, when he talks about blowing shofar in Elul, he brings the pasuk of the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Because the tshuva of Elul is a wake-up. But already we're talking about the shvarim and the true as well, which are the three levels of tshuva. Already we're talking about the pasuk of Rosh Hashanah because potentially that's the whole tshuva already. When you blow shofar at the beginning of Elul, you're already encapsulating, you're already capturing potentially the entire Shuvah. But, that's how important the waking up is. That's how important the perspective of waking up is. That's why it's so important, as the speaker says, to understand that Elul is different, not to waste the Elul, to be, what's all, by the way, positive. We're not talking about, in Hasidus, there was this move away from being scared of Elul, as opposed to creating an urgency during Elul, like two different things. Right? Urgency is good. We learned it the last couple of weeks in Tanya, right? Urgency is very good. It's not a problem. And it has to be together with Simcha. Hashem wants us back. Hashem wants us to do Tshuva. Hashem is bringing us close. But he's right there. He just wants us to talk to him. We have to wake up and know that and see that the Melech is Basar, the king is in the field. As the Rebbe points out always, that the Alter Rebbe in his Maimer says, when you go to the king, he greets you beautifully. He shows a laughing face to everyone that comes. You just have to come. You have to wake out of bed. I always say, the king is in the field, it's not in your bedroom. You have to get out of bed and go greet him. So this concept, the Torah wants to bring out, and the Rambam wants to bring out, there's many specifics of Tshuva, but he wants to bring out the importance and the criticalness of the first stage, which is wake up, create a sense of urgency, do something different. Like we say, in Elul, you've got to increase in davening, increase in tzedakah, increase in avos yisrael, all these things, right? Know that it's different. The Rebbe Rashab, he doesn't bring this away, but I'll just bring it out. The Rebbe Rashab once said, I heard this from an old Chassid who heard from a Chassid of the Rebbe Rashab. He said, the Rebbe Rashab was once fabraying in the middle of Elul, and he made the following statement. I'm sure I've said this before. And he said, in Yiddish, he says, Heintish nis zuntik, he says, today's not Sunday, today's not Monday, today's not Tuesday. He went through all the days of the week until Shabbos. And when he got to Shabbos, he says, Heintish is Shabbos, Heintish Elul, today's Elul. In other words, it's not regular, like the Friedrich Rebbe says in the subscription, it's not regular days. It's different. And that waking up to know that it's different, the Torah says, you know, when you do that, you really potentially have the whole Rosh Hashanah with you. And that's why it brings the Pasuk. That is really a Pasuk about Shofar Rosh Hashanah, not a Pasuk about Shofar of Elul. And that's why the Rambam says, Chizru b'tshuva, he says, do tshuva after the waking up paragraph. He says, you've got the whole tshuva already. But obviously, you can't stop there. The point is, you have it now potentially, but now you've got to break it down. Now you've got to break it down. You have to do a real Shuvah. You have to do the specifics. You have to go to the Rosh Hashanah stage, the three brachas, you have to go to the Yom Kippur stage, the Sukkah stage. You've got to do the work, of course. But know that you already potentially have it all. That's how important waking up is. Right? Now let's go back to the Rashi. The machloikus between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. You need them both. Rabbi Akiva is talking about the waking up. Rabbi Akiva says, you're not scared of war when you've woken up. If you're scared of your Averis, you've woken up already. If you've woken up, it's all good. Right? Basically, he says, no, you still have to be worried about the Averis. What are they talking about? They're not arguing. Meaning, they're arguing about the Pshat and the Pasuk, of course. But the both opinions are we read Shoftim in Elul. This Rashi is a formula for Elul. We have to understand the Rabbi Akiva perspective. The Rabbi Akiva perspective is, you're a person, you haven't done any tshuva yet, but you've woken up, you're really worried, you've created urgency, you're done. You have it all. True, you do have it all. That's true. That's how important waking up is. That's Rabbi Akiva's message. And then comes Rabbi Yossi Aglili and says, yes, but you still have to be scared because you still got to do tshuva. And you got to do tshuva. And that's why you have both opinions of Elul. It says the waking up, which according to Rabbi Akiva, and this is what the Rambam's point is in the tour, that the waking up is the whole thing. You have, in that waking up, you have it all. That's how important waking up is. And that's the foundation to everything. And then you also have to translate it into all the layers of, you have it in the essence of your neshama, but you have to then translate it into every part of your functional experience, your emotions, your brain, your heart, your actions, your behavior. You've got to bring it down to all the details, and that's Rabbi Yossi Aglili's message. And those are the two opinions of how we fight the spiritual war to get to the victory on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. All right. We should have a good Elul.